Good afternoon. I thought I'd break from my normal routine and kind of do what's appropriate under the circumstances. I thought I'd start by outlining that kickoff coverage play from Thursday night and making a statement regarding my actions and thoughts surrounding that, and then provide you guys an opportunity to ask any and every question that you have in regard to it before reviewing the performance, going through the injuries, and pushing forward toward Miami, our normal Tuesday stuff. I think under the circumstances, that's appropriate. And I'll be very point blank and black and white and clear with you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Steelers.com Live. I'm Bob Labriola, joined by Craig Wolfley. And, Wolf, this Tomlin Tuesday was anything but a normal Tuesday. Mike Tomlin responding, I guess, or let's say this, making himself available to respond to any and all questions that might be posed about the kickoff return slash sideline incident that happened on Thanksgiving night against the Ravens in Baltimore. And it was a little bit of a departure from the normal Tomlin Tuesday news conference. We heard how Mike Tomlin opened by explaining how it was going to happen. And what did end up happening was this. Mike Tomlin gave a opening statement, as he often does, but this time it was totally confined to this play that we're watching here. And then he opened it up for questions. And the questions and the questions and the questions. And then at one point Mike Tomlin said, "Is there anything else?" And then there were more questions and questions. And then he said, "Are we done? You know, is everybody," in other words, he didn't say this, I am paraphrasing, has everybody asked everything they need to ask about this? And only after there was silence, which in the news conference means yes, then we got on to a little bit about the normal business of a Tuesday, which is, in this Steelers season anyway, always includes a nice, sizable injury report on the latest offensive linemen who are going to be unavailable, and then some talk about the Miami Dolphins. But, you know, let's kind of take it in the order of the day's events. Let's start with Thursday night in Baltimore, down on the sideline. You are a guy who lives down there as well. Just a little bit of what you saw from field level down there on that kickoff return by Jacoby Jones.
Actually, I had a pretty good view of it, because here's the case. When you're down on the sidelines, you lose perspective of where you're at. I wear a headset, so I'm listening to the broadcast, Tunch and Billy Hillgrove talking, and the coaches, they all have headsets on. They're listening to the other coaches. And so what you're doing is you're totally enraptured in the moment and what's going on. You naturally draw forward. And I know there's a whole boundary line that you're not supposed to cross. And, you know, you try to maintain a professional distancing there. As I'm coming up along and watching the kickoff return, I'm pressing and I see exactly what unfolded. Mike Tomlin's back is to Jacoby Jones. He's watching the board. I know what it's like, because when you have some part of the sensory taken away and that you are just listening and watching up on the board, you press in, and I have found myself in times past, I'm practically next to Mike Tomlin, and then it's like, oh, excuse me, and I need to pull back and get where I'm supposed to be, because you lose that definition of lines and where you got to be on the sidelines, and you have security guards that are there for the media, who constantly, they're get-back coaches for the media, the security guys, and you have a get-back coach along the sidelines. Probably it's Garrett Guimond, I'm not sure.
Usually, he's
telling these guys, you got to get back. So you lose that perspective. And Mike is doing just what he said he was doing. I'm watching it on the board. He didn't realize there was any problems up until the moment he saw himself on the Jumbotron. That's when he made the move to get off. And I think it was pretty self-explanatory. I thought it was a great explanation that Mike gave.
You know, the other thing about the situation is, and here we are on camera, okay. Now, we're sitting at this set, and there are cameras shooting us, which would be similar to the situation where Mike Tomlin is looking up at the Jumbotron. Now, for people who have never been on TV, they're not TV stars like us, Wolf. You know what I mean?
Uh-oh.
But what you have to understand is everything is opposite. You know, if I want to touch the logo on my sweater, you know, and I think it's where it is, you know, and you go to touch it, oh no, it's this side.
Yes.
You know?
That's exactly it.
Because if you look, as I'm looking at myself, it should be right here, but it's not, it's here. So that also is in play, I think, when you're judging, you know, how he moved and why he moved the way he moved, because your instinct in real time too, I mean, can we see it in real time once?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because that's, if you slow it down enough, I mean, it's rife for interpretation. But the speed with which it happens, the moment when Mike Tomlin sees himself on the Jumbotron until Jacoby Jones is next to him, is probably not much more than a full second, if that.
Exactly so.
So, you know, there's that as well. And let me say this right from the beginning. What I know of Mike Tomlin, how he, the reverence that he has for the sport and the game of football, the NFL, his place in it, the franchise that he works for, to me, he would never have ever tried to intentionally impede this play, because here's another thing. How did he know that the Ravens were going to run that return to his sideline instead of the other sideline or up the middle? I mean, yeah.
You know, here's the thing about it. You know, there one time there was a comment made about the, you know, the integrity of the defensive call, and did it get across? And he said two words, Dick LeBeau. All right? That spoke to the integrity. Everybody has an esteem for Dick LeBeau and his character. I'll say the same thing right here. Mike Tomlin, as you pointed out, has great reverence for the game, and there is integrity and character in that man. There's no way he tries to do something like that intentionally, just no way.
Well, and, you know, the other thing is if he had, I mean, that's a touchdown.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's, okay, so what's the difference? If you trip him, that's a touchdown. And if he runs all the way, it's a touchdown.
If you are a little bit slow, you get blasted, lit up on national TV. Okay? I don't think he was looking for that either.
No, but I'm looking at the sinister approach.
Yes.
You know, was he trying to help Cortez Allen make that tackle?
No. You cannot tell the distance behind you on that board with any real clarity. You can't. It drives you nuts.
And here's the other thing. And we were all at the game, and so for those people who watched it on television, I'm here to tell you this. During the game, I don't care what it says on the Ravens website, the explanation that this one guy wrote a story about trying to say, we didn't put Mike Tomlin on the scoreboard. Ravens vision is always about the Ravens. Nah. I'm here to tell you that they had to run that replay a dozen times on the Ravens vision, and they kept showing him, and the crowd was booing, and then they'd show the replay, and then it'd go back to him, and then the crowd would boo some more. I mean, it was totally, and hey, they're doing what they're doing to entertain their fans, and that's fine. I mean, I have no problem with, you know, showing the opposing coach in an embarrassing moment, especially if it's a rival, and hey, that's what it is. That's part of what makes Steelers Ravens, you know, those games for the players and coaches, you know, the hair stands up on the back of your neck.
Yes.
Great. But don't deny it. I mean, seriously. And he was reacting. The laughter, the smile on his face was not, oh, I almost got Jacoby Jones on the ground. It was, you know, these people are really booing me, and this guy with his camera is following me all around the sideline. So anyway.
Exactly.
Mike Tomlin also spoke about the integrity of the sport and, you know, how the respect he has for it. Let's take a listen to that.
I also understand with my position comes the charge of preserving and protecting the integrity of the game of football. And I think probably my biggest error on Thursday night is not realizing that play jeopardized the integrity of the game from a perception standpoint. At no time Thursday night in the game or after did I realize that my actions would be perceived potentially or could be perceived potentially as intentional. And that's a mistake on my part. As someone that's in my position that's supposed to preserve the integrity of the game of football, I should have realized the potential for that and acted accordingly. I didn't realize that potential. Really, I was focused on the blunder itself, the embarrassment it produced, and moving my football team past it. That was the number one guiding influence of my actions, and not recognizing the potential of perception from that standpoint. I also fell short of the duties that come with my position.
You know, Wolf, I'm going to be honest. I didn't when after that game was over, and we're down underneath the stadium on the buses waiting to go to the airport.
Right.
If you would have asked me, give me two or three controversial things out of the game, that I wouldn't have thought of that.
Really?
No. I mean, I was much more the two touchdowns taken off the board and how the officials, you know, after we have seen so much of, you know, the player safety initiative and the rules and regulations regarding that and the fines levied for helmet-to-helmet contact and launching at a ball carrier and all of that stuff, how the Le'Veon Bell touchdown was disallowed, and how you're going to tell me that these 22 and 91 did not both lower their heads and target him? I mean, are you kidding me? How is that any different than what James Harrison did so often that he drew the fines for? I mean, I'm sorry. And the other thing to me that when you talk about controversy is that, you know, the rule for the helmet to come off, okay, I understand what the intent is. It's protecting the player. But Le'Veon Bell made no effort, none, to gain more yards, to try to run more, anything. All he did upon contact was what Isaac Newton says happens to everybody. He fell.
Yeah.
Gravity. And apparently in New York, that's an anti-gravity area. Zero gravity does not count in the NFL offices in New York. So anyway.
They must have air brakes in New York.
Must have. So. Okay. Well, now we're moving on to
yes.
Injuries. As I mentioned, it wouldn't be a Tomlin Tuesday without a nice injury report. And let's go through this now. We're not even going to talk about Fernando Velasco being injured because we already know he's on injured reserve. And the Steelers will start their third different center of the season.
And actually, in this game. Fourth different center.
Right,
Kelvin Beachum.
Yes.
So you're talking, you know, but three different centers are about to start.
Yeah, two on IR. But the this is the injury report as disseminated by Mike Tomlin earlier today. Kelvin Beachum is not going to be practicing early in the week. He has a right knee sprain. Mike Tomlin characterized his availability for the game as questionable. Not a good sign. David DeCastro has a left foot sprain. He also will be limited in practice early in the week. His participation also was described by Mike Tomlin as questionable. That's for the game, not for practice. Brett Kiesel, moving to the other line of scrimmage, he's out with his foot injury, plantar fasciitis. As Mike Tomlin said, he took a step backward. Mike Adams has a left ankle sprain, will be available for practice in some capacity tomorrow when the team gets back at it. So let's just go over the depth chart, Wolf. And as I was asking you, would you do it for a game check?
I think my eligibility has been used up.
But, you know, what we're looking at here is a team with 8 offensive linemen currently on the roster. That's everybody. Okay? So you're looking at Beachum and DeCastro is probably questionable at best. So that leaves you with 6. And one of them is Eric Olson, who's been here, I think, now for about 25 minutes. That gives you probably 5 guys that you can think you can go with. I don't know, Wolf, Coach Wolfley, if you got no Beachum or DeCastro, I guess what are we doing here? We're going with Mike Adams at left tackle and
you're
gonna
Abdullah
have to go the Butcher
with any
at right
health,
guard.
Yeah, any healthy body that you can find. You're going to have to go to. I mean, this really is a troublesome problem. I mean, you think about it. How many different line combinations. This is their ninth.
Sixth starting.
Okay, sixth starting line combination.
They in 12 games. 12,
yeah. I mean, it's almost unheard. Well, it is unheard of. I've never seen anything like it, where you have four or five offensive linemen have got your starters. They've got ankle injuries, foot injuries. I mean, you know, it's almost mind-boggling that you could have so many injuries hit in one specific spot.
And so many years in a row.
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know, locally here in the Pittsburgh area, one of the football games broadcast on Sunday was Arizona at Philadelphia. And, you know, I was having a little few nachos, and, you know, while I'm watching, I had a Sunday off.
Of course, you got to have your snackages.
I almost choked on my snacks when the announcer of the Eagles-Cardinals game, the Eagles are breaking the huddle, and he says, and the Eagles' five offensive linemen have played every offensive snap together this season.
It's amazing. Now, and think about this. We had two linemen that didn't even get on the field, you know, in actual game because they signed them and they were gone.
Yeah.
One due to injury, one due to personal issues.
Yeah.
So I don't have words that can really tell, you know, or comprehend what is going on as far as that goes. But it certainly is uncomfortable, I would say.
Let's talk a little bit about Cody Wallace. Cody Wallace has been here since right after the roster was cut down on August the 31st. He was claimed off the waiver wire, center guard. What can you tell me about Cody Wallace?
You know what? He's been around a long time, and he just got his first snaps at center last week. He played a little bit both guards, if you remember, a few weeks back when we had Dave DeCastro go down, and then on the other side, Ramon Foster got nicked up. And so he's bounced around, but look, he's been at the craft for a long time. You got to believe that he's absorbed an awful lot, has enough that he stayed in the league. People thought highly enough of him that they brought him in. So, and the fact is, he's like my son-in-law. He's a Texas A&M guy. So he's an Aggie. So he's got to be tough.
Is that okay?
Yeah, that'll work for me.
Okay.
Works, you know?
Well, talk to me a little bit about the difference. You mentioned he played some guard here already.
Yes.
Okay, now you're going to the position where the ball's between your legs.
Now you've got this position where you have to pay particular attention to code words, to directing traffic on the inside for blocking patterns, making sure everybody's on the same page, and then getting the functional snap done. I mean, if you've got to be able to be comfort in that shotgun snap, both from center, underneath, and then that shotgun, like I said, those are two things that you got to be able to do. Now, the thing that comes with it is being able to snap the ball and then getting your opposite hand up and getting it on the guy as quickly as possible. As a guard, you don't have to worry about snapping the ball. You don't have to worry about if the quarterback's under center, if he's riding you, making sure that you get a clean snap. You, as a guard, you just boom, and you're up. And if it's a pass, you're getting your hands, both hands on a guy. If it's run block, you're getting two hands on the guy. But as a center, you got to make sure that ball gets back. If he's under center, secure the handoff. If it's shotgun, get it back. But that opposite hand has to be up and making contact immediately.
Okay, I got a question for
yes.
you. No huddle easier or more difficult for you as the center?
I think it's more difficult because you've got a lot of things racing around in your gourd. You know, you've got no time to sit in and have other guys. You know, hopefully Ramon Foster will be there. Hopefully David DeCastro could be there. You're hoping, you know, but the fact is you might not. And so he's got to make sure that he is up on all his code words, directives, P's and Q's, dot in the I's, crossing the T's, able to make sure that he's got other guys going. He's mostly the guy that calls out fronts, calls out mics. Well,
could
things
one of the
nature.
Guards do it for him?
They could do it for him, but at the center you have a good view on both sides. When you get on one side or the other, you know, sometimes back in my day when we were a little shorter and stumpier, you couldn't see over everybody. So, but Cody is a tall enough guy. I think it'd be no
okay.
Problem.
You're the center, 4-3 defense, the Dolphins. Does that help you or not?
I think it helps him because he won't have somebody right on his nose.
Like Haloti Ngata.
Yeah,
or somebody.
You know, it's one thing to have Haloti Ngata on your noggin. You know, he's sitting right there ready to unload, and I think it's good for him. But I'm sure that they play some over and under, so he's going to have some people on his nose with the nose tackle shifting to either side of the A-gap or offset, or sometimes if he plays a zero technique where he's set straight up over. So it all depends on what the Dolphins defense, what they choose to do. But he's going to have to be, you know, he's going to have to be very technique sharp. He's going to have to be code word, no huddle, in the huddle, whatever sharp, set in the huddle. And it's always mindful because you are the center. You set the depth of the huddle. You get everybody back and so forth. So those are all things he's got to now be mindful of.
Okay, the other significant injury, of course, is Le'Veon Bell, who on the play that we showed earlier that was not flagged or no one has gotten fined yet, but it's still early, but I have a feeling that that's not going to happen. Le'Veon Bell sustained a concussion, and he is now going through the concussion protocol. A couple of good signs to me. It was not necessary for Le'Veon Bell to stay behind.
Yeah,
he was able to come home with the team that night. You know, if it was really bad, they wouldn't have done that. Also, on Monday, yesterday, which was a bonus day during this week of preparation for the Steelers, you know, Le'Veon Bell was able to do the, you know, light workout, running around kind of stuff as we're looking at here that the rest of the team took part in. Now he is going to be, he is in the concussion protocol and will be subjected to it, you know, over the course of the next several days. We really don't know, you know, how that is going to work out. Only time will tell. But, Wolf, I'm here to ask you something. That run, that touchdown that they took away from him, you were down there, right? That was a real two-chin strap, a man's...
That was a man's run because he knew he was going to get hit. He knew he was going to be busted up in there. But watch, when he takes this now, when he takes that acceleration step forward, I'm telling you, from ground level, it looked like a jet taking off. It was just terrific. But you just heard this terrific crunch. Bam! When he heads up here north and south right here, and you know, boom! It was just unbelievable. And the first thing that shocks you is the helmet shooting off. You know, you didn't know whether it was the ball or what, you know, and then to see him there. And as soon as you saw the arm stiffen, you knew something bad was afoot. It was not a good ending.
You know, in the play itself, too, it looked like there was a little bit of penetration, maybe. And that's what kind of caused Le'Veon Bell to have to go backwards a little bit to get away from that. And then, you know, he kind of, I won't say he was, you know, running east and west, because I think that does a disservice to the toughness that he showed on that particular run. But he did kind of have to go parallel a little bit to look for a gap. When he saw that, though,
he was just pulling G's when he got north and south. That little bounce around and then acceleration. There was no fear, no indecision, no nothing. I mean, he just accelerated and dropped the shoulder down. There was a terrific collision. You know, I walked out through the hangar behind Le'Veon after that night, after we landed back in Pittsburgh. He seemed completely fine. You know, just watch him. He didn't even have anybody watching or anything. He was just fine, and, of course, the staff had already attended to him. I think he's going to have a real quick recovery here. He's a young buck. But certainly in watching the way he accelerated through that run, I loved it, man. He was smelling the goal line, and he was going for the gold. And as they say, there's no dirt like pay dirt, brother.
Did he show you anything? I mean, I know, you know, he's a rookie still. He has obviously established himself, I thought, in training camp as the best running back on this team. But, you know, in terms of, you know, if you were a veteran on this team, did that run show you something from him that I won't say that you hadn't seen before, but I don't know, maybe puts him on a different little bit of a level in terms of, you know, what kind of running back he can be and he is right now?
You know what it does and what it says to me is the guy's willing to put it on the line. And the guy is willing to put his own health on the line. He has no regard for his safety nor anybody else's. He is going for the touchdown. You love guys. You want to play with guys like that. Those are the guys that you want to go down dark alleys with and so forth, because they are willing to risk it all to go for it, because they are part of a group and they have one big job, that's to move forward. And to me, that just is, I can't even understand how, I understand the letter of the law, you know, but to take away that touchdown run is just beyond what I can comprehend, really.
It's just mean.
Yeah. Right. It's just, I mean, you're going to do that. You're going to lay it on the line. Then you're going to take it away afterwards because you say, oh, gee, the guy didn't duct tape his helmet on or he's got no air brakes. Are you kidding me?
And not to be bitter, but the extra play, that's when Fernando Velasco tore his Achilles.
That's to be bitter. I saw Fernando pounding the ground afterwards. I know what he was thinking. Dadgummit, here we had to run an extra play, and then you just get caught in that one situation that you might have not have. And it's unfortunate, and then here you go. You got your third center, fourth guy overall, but third starting center coming up.
Okay, flipping it over a little bit, Wolf, a little bit of a homecoming this Sunday. Mike Wallace coming back to Pittsburgh after signing as an unrestricted free agent with the Miami Dolphins. We'll be talking about him and his impact on that team and, what kind of plan the Steelers might have for him coming back. But Mike Tomlin talked a little bit about him as well.
We know what Mike Wallace is capable of and got a great deal of respect for him and his game and what he can do inside stadiums. He's capable of taking the top off the coverage. Obviously, since he's been in the league, he's worked hard at developing a well-rounded game, and that's evident. Even last week in terms of taking a short catch and turning and breaking a tackle and producing a touchdown. Love Mike. Won't love Mike on Sunday. We got business, and he stands in the way. I think he has a respect for that. We do, too.
Mike, do you see them using Wallace in any different way than you guys did? Have you seen what development have you seen in Mike's game just from last year this year?
Again, I hadn't pondered what their plan is in regards to utilizing Mike relative to ours. Their components around Mike are different than the components that we had around Mike, so I don't expect it to be the same. I expect it to be built to suit their needs, and it is. He's a big component of what they're doing and is really doing a nice job for him. Mike is a competitor. Mike is a worker. I expect nothing but that from Mike, not only this week, but in the stadium.
Wolf, Mike Tomlin mentioned the components that the Dolphins have around Mike Wallace are different than the components the Steelers had around Mike Wallace. And let's start with the number one component, Ryan Tannehill versus Ben Roethlisberger. Now, I'm not ripping Ryan Tannehill as a quarterback in this league, but what I am saying is he is not the deep ball thrower or the stand in the pocket, shrug off the rush, extend the play quarterback that Ben Roethlisberger is. And as a result, Mike Wallace has not had the deep down the field impact, I think, that, Dolphins fans thought they were getting. When right after he was signed, I'm sure there were a lot of highlights packages, of things Mike Wallace did here. And I'm sure they, maybe showed that 95-yard touchdown against the Arizona Cardinals once or twice. But that has not happened for Mike Wallace in Miami. And the perception of him, now I'm not talking about what the coaches think of him, what his teammates think of him, what the organization believes they got by signing him. That's not what I'm talking about. The perception is Twitterverse, Facebook, all of that kind of stuff, the fans, talk shows. Mike Wallace is, I won't say he's being perceived as a bust, but he is not having a very easy time of it. Let's put it that way, down in Miami, based on the contract that he signed and what the expectations for him were when he signed that contract. Now, the Dolphins' offense was in desperate need of a playmaker. They added one. Mike Wallace has not turned the Dolphins' offense into a big play flying circus. I don't know if that was the expectation, but that has not happened. And so Mike Wallace is getting a little bit of, pushback down in Miami. So, we'll see what happens when the Dolphins come up to Pittsburgh. I'm sure the Heinz Field fans will extend the typical warm greeting that they always do for former Steelers players who come back wearing a different colored jersey. And, but hopefully a Steelers secondary that has given up, I think it's 8 pass plays of 50 or more yards, is not the unit that helps Mike Wallace get well and earn himself back into the good graces of those Dolphin fans. Okay, that'll do it for this edition of Steelers.com Live. For Craig Wolfley, I'm Bob Labriola. Thanks for watching. Tomorrow at 4, the A-team is back. Missy Matthews.